Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are entering the CFO panel. And again, I just want to thank our sponsors, the ICAEW, Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, who sponsor our show and allow us to bring you this kind of content, which I think is one of the few shows in the world that actually focuses on success, leadership, and helping you get your profession to that next notch, basically making success a little more successful. To help us with this dialogue in this episode, we have two of the biggest CFOs out here. We have VP Nagarajan, the Executive Director for Projects at the ETA, man who goes by the name of VPN. Welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you. Do we really call you VPN, or would you prefer
VPN
Nagarajan?
VPN is fine, I think.
Okay. I'm like quite impressed with myself. Like, I'm saying your last name correctly, right?
So absolutely.
I'm pretty good. But thanks again for coming. Our next guest is Ramesh Mahalingan, MD of Ideal Management Consultants and the Chief Financial Officer for Marka. Welcome, Ramesh.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So maybe you guys can maybe just tell us a little bit about yourselves and just update us on how your career unfolded. Yeah.
I hail from India. I completed my chartered accountancy in 1984, and I also completed my company secretaryship and cost accounting. I started my career with the ETA Group effectively in 1985, and I've been in Dubai since 1985, the same company. So it's been a wonderful experience, and
sure it has.
With an entrepreneurial kind of a culture, there hardly is any incentive for you to leave the organization. So it's a wonderful experience, and as we go along, probably we can share some of these as to how we transform from being a mere accountant to be the CEO.
It's basically
CEO.
Like 30 years.
That's right.
In the same company.
That's correct.
Unbelievable. The stories you could tell. Ramesh, can you tell us a little bit about yours?
Well, Shane, I might not look it, but I'm actually a chartered accountant from 1983. That's a year earlier than VPN. And I started...
So you're senior. Is that what you're insinuating with that comment, that you're senior, Tim?
Professionally, yes.
You want to change the order to put him first and me second? It's fine.
Yeah, it's they didn't take any, like, first sentence right out of the gates. It's like, okay.
We've been friends for the last 27 years, ever since I've been
all?
In Dubai.
Is that all?
Well, ever since I've been in Dubai. So at the age of 21, I started out with a chartered accountancy, armed with it, and a rank, a merit list. Position and worked as area accountant in Shaw Wallace in India. Quickly hopped a couple of jobs in the next 3 years, first as division accountant and thereafter as budgets and brand accountant at Colgate Palmolive, the premier FMCG company in India, and then hopped over to Dubai in 1987 with a position as chief accountant at the age of 25. In a company called Rice Hassan Sadi and Company, a company that's actually 103 years old to date.
Wow.
In Dubai. That was a very interesting time because within a year I became financial controller of this company, and at that point in time the company was over 80 years in existence. And after about 3 years as financial controller there, moved on to go to Schlumberger, the oil company. Those days, the division was known as Dowell Schlumberger, as district controller. Stayed there for a while and then became head of finance for Dowell Schlumberger's sponsors, Al Mansouri Specialized Engineering, Abu Dhabi. So as you can see, I've been moving one rung of the ladder at a time, but in different companies across industries, until I moved into banking in 1998 as financial controller of an investment bank in Bahrain. The next step was CFO of the bank, and thereafter I was promoted to head the asset management division as senior vice president. So I was doing actually two roles, CFO and heading up the asset management of this bank known as Tayyip Bank, which, by the way, was later acquired by Dubai Holding. And so that was a career of about 20 years spent rising up to CFO level. And then I moved back to the UAE as CFO of Thames Waters project, infrastructure project in Ajman, and then back into Finance House as Chief Financial Officer and Chief Investments Officer. So again, a dual role. That was my last position until I set up my own firm 4 years back.
Took the jump to be an entrepreneur. Yeah,
that's right.
And so was that a scary move?
Actually, I wasn't scared. I knew there was a felt need in the market to be filled, and that of some quality outsourced services, which many an entrepreneur was feeling the need for. And so we kind of filled in. And looking back, the timing was right for us. 1st January 2011, when we were at the nadir of the recession, when people had already fired many of their expensive...
The hatchet man had been loose. There was blood on the floor. And you said, great, there's money to be made.
Well, in a sense, yes. If you put it that way, yes. But then, where constructive work was required, we were the people available, ready and willing and able.
And scalable.
And scalable, too.
Excellent. So, I mean, I think, you know, when you describe your career path, there was an interesting jump from controller to CFO. And I think this is where a lot of people get stuck. And I just want to tell the audience out there right now that, you know, the best part about the show, it's interactive. So you can either use your Dubai I-1038 mobile app and send us in a question, or you can SMS us at 4001. That's SMS 4001, 4001. One or 4001 or however you want to remember it, just SMS us any question you have, and we can field that. So just to kick off, maybe I can start with UVPN. What is the difference between a controller and a CFO?
See, controller, basically he's an accountant who graduates into that role of a controller by supervising a set of people and also probably getting into a diverse activity profile. A CFO is a completely different ballgame altogether. He moves from there. He picks up the information from the controller and then moves on from there. Let me give you a small story to explain the difference between a controller and a CFO. This is a story that we picked up from the old tales from India. A person, an old man, died in a village. He left a will which said, my wealth will be distributed as per the letter of wishes. He said 50% of it, half of it will go to his son, one quarter will go to the local temple, then 20% of it, one-fifth of it, will be given away to a loyal servant.
We have to do math in this.
It's yeah, not much of maths.
My God.
So, what happens at the end of it? It becomes a difficult exercise with someone saying that it's half of 19, so he leaves 19 cows behind. So half of 19 is 9.5. So somebody gets stopped there. I'm unable to distribute. That's probably the profile of a controller kind of a thing. He goes exactly as per the letter of wishes. Then a wise man comes in. He says, I will distribute it. He puts in his cow, makes it 20, distributes 50% to the son. So that is 10 gone. Then he takes one-fourth of it, 5, gives it to the local temple. 20% of it, 4, he gives away to the servant. And then he takes the cow away. So that's the difference. So a CFO comes in, he gives a solution when there is a problem. And he's a different profile altogether compared to a controller. A controller is a situation at that point in time. He looks at the past and the present. A CFO, he has an internal role to play, understanding the operations very well. He takes care of the cash flow. He looks at the strategy. And he also has to liaise with an external environment. He has to be somebody who has to market the company to the investors. He should be in a position to chart out the strategy going forward. So that it's a completely different role, and people have to probably seamlessly follow by the environment in which they operate.
So, and a lot of people out there, they have the CFO title, but they're not CFOs. They're controllers, effectively.
It's quite possible.
Especially out here. And so, Ramesh, what is your take on the difference between the controller and CFO?
I'm tempted to summarize what VPN said in like four words. Controller is all about value protection or value preservation, and a CFO is all about value creation. A controller is more inwardly focused. He controls based on the data that he collects and the information that he generates. He makes sure that everybody toes the line and keeps to the strategy that has been written out by the CFO and the rest of the C-suite. The CFO is predominantly somebody who looks outward, who is the bridge between the company and the rest of the world, primarily the finance world. And so he's the person who's really the guy who gets the money in from the funding part of the world, the financing agents, the intermediates, the financing intermediaries, and so on. And it's the CFO, therefore, that is between the company and the financing world. Now, he is somebody who works closely with the CEO, who supports strategy, and who helps write the future of the company. A controller, by contrast, would be focusing more on the past and possibly the present, but is not so involved with the future as the CFO is. And the CFO should therefore be talking long term, and the CFO should be somebody who's been a controller earlier so as to know all aspects and dimensions of the finance world, the finance.
I think we should change the name of accountants to financial historians.
Oh, that's wrong.
No?
that would be a controller.
That's true.
Yeah, it's accountants, right? Accountants are control. CFO is not an accountant,
that's
right?
Correct.
Yeah, so accountants, financial historian, I think.
Financial
because
historians.
They never tell. They always tell you stuff that happened like at best 30 days ago. How's that help?
But that's only financial accountants. You have management accountants and budget accountants that are peering into the future, that are writing the business plans and putting numbers to the verbal utterances of their business colleagues.
The verbal utterance, but then they say, oh no, I can't do that. I need an economist, you know, to do that. And then, you know, it's the role at the end of the day, the entrepreneur, you need to have the top CFOs have that entrepreneurial splash. And in my humble opinion, does not the qualification itself, you know, as you walk through and you suffer through all this accounting training, actually bleeds out any entrepreneurial flair that, you know, the accountant may have by the time they get their qualification? In that sense, the actual stonewall barrier to becoming a CFO is the accounting qualification itself. The very thing you got to become a CFO is your own Achilles heel.
Let me tackle it this way. let me just say that to become an accountant, it requires a great degree of skill and dexterity and the ability to focus and a huge amount of discipline because it's a very structured world for accountants.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you there. We're gonna get back to this debate. Sure. As to what really are the growth catalysts to making that jump into the CFO seat in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are in the CFO panel with two of the top CFOs in the region. We have Ramesh Malalingam, the Managing Director of Ideal Management Consultants and current CFO for Marka. Ramesh, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
Am I saying your last name correct?
It's Mahalingam.
Mahalingam.
That's right.
That's what I said, I think.
Yep. Yeah, great.
Say
Mahalingam. You're very close.
Very close.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, great. And our other guest is the Executive Director for Projects at the ETA Group. A man, he's only been there for three decades, since 1984, 1985, I think. It goes by the name of VPN. It's VP Nagarajan. Welcome to
Thank
Back
you.
To Cruise.
Thanks.
So is that's right, 30 years, right?
Yeah,
it's all,
that's right.
It's all. So it's not, you know, it's just 30 years. Okay. So we were just chatting, for those of you just joining us, we're just chatting about making the jump from controller to CFO. And in a sense, you know, the accounting qualification teaches you to think linearly and teaches you to think a certain way. And almost you get that qualification to become a CFO in many instances, not always, but in many instances. But in a sense, that's also the shackles that keep you in the controller position. Almost the people who break into the CFO, they have to break that shackles. So is the qualification actually both your passport and your Achilles heel into the CFO seat? Anyone? Not both of
just,
you at the same time.
Just going by... let me take it now. See, the accounting qualification gives you an excellent grounding. You know the numbers. If you have to run a business, you need to know the numbers. How do you graduate from being a controller to a CFO? Let me take my example. In ETA, we had an excellent entrepreneurial environment. So what happens, the shift is gradual and you probably may not even realize. Let me give you an example as to how the skew took place in my career graph. I was 27 years old, working with ETA. There was a problem to be solved. We were buying cables from Germany and selling it into India. That was a time when we had to pay in Deutschmarks at that time and receive the payment in Indian rupees. Deutschmark was a currency that was appreciating. And the Indian rupee was traditionally a currency that was depreciating. At that point in time, we had to get a cross currency forward. It wasn't available because rupee was not a traded currency. So just as a youngster, maybe as a controller, as you might call it, I went to my managing director. He put this question. I want you to find a solution for a forward cross currency transaction. I went and told him there is no forward market for the Indian rupee. He blasted me like hell. He said, I'm not employing chartered accountants to tell me what is available in the market. I need you to create a solution for a problem. I need to sell these cables from Germany into India. I need you to find a solution. And he gave us 2 days' time. Give me 2 days' time to find a solution. We went around the market. Finally, we found a foreign bank which found a counterparty in Singapore to do the trade for us. They took away the counterparty risk from us by doing the transaction with us, and the foreign bank did the transaction with the other counterparty to insulate us from this risk. That is a shift. From a mere accountant and a controller, you now knew that you can find a solution when the situation doesn't openly present a possibility for you to be in a position to find a solution for a business problem. That's the shift.
So you basically need to have a manager who's going to encourage you to get out of the box.
Absolutely. If you need to shift gradually, see, it's not a question of being a controller one day and the next day you get a designation. It's not a designation that makes you that. It is what you are that gives you the designation. So, and for this, the environment has to be conducive. And if you are in the midst of people who are business people, it automatically gets ingrained into you.
And Ramesh?
In my case, the shift from controller to CFO happened when I was in the bank, where the person before me was barely able to produce numbers on a monthly basis, fairly timely, yes, but then was never able to explain the story behind the numbers. I brought that about in the bank.
Your CFO that you're reporting to in the bank couldn't tell them?
No. The person before me was a financial controller. Okay. So I took over from him.
Okay.
And obviously, I had to produce the numbers on time every month for sure for across the bank, and it was a global bank. But then at the end of my number-producing exercise, I would add the story behind every shift in the numbers with a practical explanation of what went right or what went wrong for the numbers to have moved from the previous month to the current month, and how we could prevent a recurrence, often in discussion with the business manager. So that communication between the number producing exercise and the business persons, the business people who did the business and who generated those numbers. Yeah, that communication was never happening in the bank earlier. So when I started this, the CEO took note and he said, hey, we now have this person who's got an appreciation for the business itself, and why don't I encourage him to become the CFO and then start making the moves that would drive the business managers towards the bank's strategic targets. And so what happened was the numbers person was now driving people towards strategic objectives that were broken down into long-term and short-term. So the short-term objectives, which were in the budget of the bank, were now becoming more explainable in business terms, in business speak rather than in accountant speak. And that was my first experience in doing something CFO-ish from being a controller. And then there was no looking back.
That almost sounds like some good advice, you know, for a controller. Do something CFO-ish. That's a good quote. But it's interesting. So many people get stuck. And it's almost like they're sitting back and waiting for the organization to develop them. And it's almost like they don't have the onus themselves to get in the driver's seat and take initiative and develop it. And they, you know, you always see people come back and say, oh, the organization isn't doing anything. I haven't had opportunities to grow. And, you know, one of the defining factors, whether it's you, VPN, or, you know, the talk we're having on November 2nd at the Canadian University of Dubai from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. in the Red Theater, Mark Shuttleworth, former CFO of Du, who also climbed Everest. He's doing a presentation to compare the two. Again, it's initiative. It's taking that jump forward, wouldn't you say?
Up to a point, yes. It's assembly line for an accountant to do his job well, diligently, and do it faster and better and reach controller. Thereafter, it's his initiative. It's he who has to take matters of his career into his hands and look at how he's going to make that big shift. And it is a big shift. Out of every 10 controllers that you see, one may probably become a CFO. And for that, he has to undo a lot of the learning that he's done earlier in sticking to the norm and the discipline, and go out and see what else can I do. How can I come get closer and integrate closer with the business managers? And that does not come easy.
VPN, did you?
Just on this, you mentioned a little while ago that, okay, this is what is the accountant's role, and he performs it, and he doesn't get an opportunity. I think if you really need to move about in an organization and you want to get higher responsibility, you should not wait for somebody to give you an opportunity. When there's something that surfaces, especially in family-managed businesses, you can see, because the shareholders sit there, so they have their interest in furthering the interest of the organization almost directly. So if you can grab an opportunity and run with it, you don't need to be rewarded for it, you don't need to be praised for it, but just you need to grab an opportunity and run. That is how leaders are formed. So once you display that quality, definitely more responsibility will be given and the progression will be smooth.
Well, talking about someone who's grabbed an opportunity and ran with it, I don't think there's a better example of Marka, the company you're the CFO now of, Ramesh, which just IPO'd and 36 times oversubscribed. 36
That's right.
times.
That's right.
What? That's right. That's right. Can you say that again? But what did you guys do to drive that kind of a result? What did you do differently than your peer group?
First off, Marka is the very first player in the retail and hospitality sector in the UAE to go public. We were given an approval from the authorities to go IPO despite being greenfield. And much of the credit for this goes to the founders, the shareholders that stood behind this name, and the team that was building this company up from scratch. Hitherto, all the other players, you will notice, are all families that have been in the business for decades and have grown these businesses franchise by franchise or store by store. But Marka is the first publicly quoted or listed company to come in and to create a space for itself, and with very innovative concepts, with new franchises. There is a strategic plan in place. This is no undefined effort or adventure. It's a very strategically planned effort, and we're well on target to achieving our short-term objectives initially and the long-term goals. We've already signed several franchises and signed several mall spaces that these franchises will go into, and so we're on course.
Well, this is the CFO panel, and we're listening to Ramesh Mahalingam, the Managing Director of Ideal Management Consultants and the CFO of one of the most exciting IPOs we've seen in the last few quarters, Marka, with a focus on the luxury retail space. And we're also listening to VP Nagarajan, the Executive Director for Projects at ETA Group. We just covered what does it take to make the jump from controller to CFO. We're now looking at what are some of the business strategies, tactics that the CFO can employ, and we have a cracking example of a live greenfield IPO case that will be sweeping across the GCC, and we'll be looking more at that in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are having a CFO panel. We're looking at what does it take to make the jump from a controller to a CFO, and what are some of the strategies publicly traded companies and some of the region's largest companies use to drive value, to drive their businesses forward. Well, two men who are at the helm of such said companies are Ramesh Mahalingam, who is the Managing Director of Ideal Management Consultants. Ramesh, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
You are also the CFO of Marka, a company that recently IPO'd at 36 times oversubscribed, a company on the precipice of pouncing into the region's retail luxury space, already with six brands under its belt and many more to go, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And we also have another gentleman who goes by the name of VPN. I think many people out there may know him, VP Nagarajan, a veteran of the space. He's only been with the ETA for about 30 years now, and is currently the executive director for projects. Welcome back, VPN. And so it's great to have you guys here. We were just talking about your IPO and how you drove that over subscription. But what's the strategy now as you lurch forward into this space that's predominantly been dominated by long legacy family groups?
I can't talk about the specifics of the strategy as much as I can tell you the overall. This is a growing space. Dubai's tourist numbers are rising, as is its population, and the number of malls, you can tell, is going up in the city. The square footage.
That's what we need. We need another mall. Are they? They're building more. Are they?
A few, actually.
A few more. Good. Well, thank God. There's not enough options, but. It's like a hobby. Going to the mall is like a bona fide hobby. I'm sure people put that on their CV, you know, like water skiing, going to the mall. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, mall hopping is actually a hobby unto itself. So with more mall space coming up, with more tourists coming into town, larger number of residents year after year, there is room. The market itself is growing, and we certainly have a strategy that is poised to take advantage of all this growth.
We are the number one shopping destination in the world. That's what we're talking about. That's a serious statistic. I mean, we went from nowhere to number one in the world over a period of 10, 12 years. That's amazing. That's what, you know, the vision of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed can do. This is true inspiration, where you go from a sandlot to the number one shopping destination in the world. How do you snatch, you know, that's the statistics that I believe I've read, that Dubai Mall is literally the number one shopping destination in the world. Right. And so you feel this is the place.
This is the place. Well, for that matter, our strategy covers the UAE initially and then extends to the rest of the GCC, yeah, in a phased manner. So Marca has its strategy all chalked out, and that is reflected in the confidence of the public in Marca, not just the oversubscription during the IPO, but in its share price thereafter. Yeah, there's a neat premium over the par value of the share. And this goes to show that the public is very convinced and is after our shares.
After our shares, the way you say it, it sounds like a vendor. But, you know, it's a great place to be. You're the first, though, as well. So you have a first mover advantage. It's really kind of a textbook strategy 101 MBA play here when you look at it.
It is, and we're proud of it. And guess what? The management team, the board of directors, the shareholders, the founders, all of them are pulling in the same direction and are setting out toward the same goal.
And will you be buying any local brands, or are you only bringing brands in from the outside?
We have been bringing brands in from outside, and we will supplement the organic growth with some inorganic growth as well. So acquisitions are on the
talks right now.
Anvil.
Is that what's echoing through the boardrooms of your organization now?
And
that there could be some local groups that are...
I wouldn't be able to go into any details as yet, because
you're sitting up much stiffer in your seat now, as we discuss here.
We're a publicly listed company, and so it wouldn't be right on my part to discuss any further, particularly on matters such as acquisitions. But yes, this is a combination of organic and inorganic growth.
Not in a position to make any definitive statements at this time.
Yes, there'll be a time and place, hopefully not too far out.
And VPN's also in a position where he doesn't want to make any definitive statements at this time. Is that, you know, a lot of people are writing in, curious to know what's happening over there at the ETA. So I have an interesting panel, but maybe we can move. I mean, you guys are on different ends of the spectrum in that, you know, you really have a first mover advantage, you know, kind of a blue ocean strategy. You know, there's not a lot of publicly traded competition. By not a lot of, I mean, there's virtually none. You are in the, and I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum. The ETA competes in the construction space, right, which has everything from the mom and pop cement bricklayer to you know, the Habtour Leighton's, you know, huge mammoth players.
True.
And so the strategy's got to be totally different. How do you, you know, what are some of the strategies you use in a pure competition market where you're knuckle to knuckle with
See, while there is tough competition, especially in the contracting space, we are in a leadership position, especially in the MEP sector. And also in the elevator business, we are in the premium segment, one of the prime elevator contractors. On the power distribution too, we have an advantage by being specialists in the 130 kV substations. So overall, if you look at our position, including the civil contracting, we are very well positioned. We've been in this market for quite some time, for a very long time, and everybody knows the company. So in spite of whatever probably might be the current market, they do believe in our ability to deliver. So, and also there are tough pre-qualification requirements when you bid for major contracts. And having proved our abilities in the past, definitely we are seen as one of the premium players in the segment. So with this Dubai scenario coming back to the shape that we have seen before, and with the market improving here, so there's a lot of opportunity for contracting companies. And also, we are also present in India. We are very bullish on India. So there again, we are premium contractors in the MEP space. And we believe that these two markets will have a bull run for the contracting business.
And you're not, and you're staying away from Africa, or what's your take on Africa?
See, Africa, we've done one project in Angola on the cement plant. We have constructed and completed a cement plant. It has been a great experience over there. But to actively chase for projects there in North Africa, we initially had some plan, but probably we might just look at it sometime later, not at the moment.
Staying away from it. What's your take on the, you're basically very bullish on the GCC market.
Absolutely.
And Dubai over the next 24 months.
Definitely. In the medium term, we're extremely confident of the GCC market.
And you're doing quite well. So no sign of a crash yet. But there has been some jitters with dropping real estate prices. You feel those are nothing to be concerned about?
See, there is likely to be a correction, and any correction in the real estate market would definitely be healthy. But unlike in the past, where there had been quite a lot of leverage and speculative play, the level of speculation is far less now, and also the banking sector is not overexposed to the real estate sector. So I think from the point of view of price correction, yes. Is there a crash? I don't see that happening. There will be a correction, but not a crash.
Just a slight correction, which yep. which could be quite good. We definitely are interested to know what exactly has been your biggest challenge. Of course, both of you guys have been in this game for 3 decades, so that's definitely exciting. We have a bunch of questions coming in from our audience, which we're going to answer in just a minute. And I also want to remind you all who are listening that there's an event on November 2nd from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Canadian University of Dubai. It's a free event led by Mark Shuttleworth, who's a former CFO of Do, talking about what it takes to make it to the top of the corporate ladder. And he's pairing that with his climb of Mount Everest, where it was the most dangerous season, one of the most dangerous seasons, where 12 people died on the mountain as he was going up it during that climbing season over those 60 days. So very, very dangerous, and a very exciting presentation draws parallels between climbing Everest and climbing the corporate game. So we're going to come back to what these gentlemen's biggest challenges are and some of the questions from our audience in just 1 minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are doing the CFO panel. And of course, I want to thank our sponsor, the ICAEW, Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales, for allowing us to bring you this insightful leadership dialogue about what it takes to make it from a controller to a CFO, what it takes to drive your organization into peak performance, and what levers do the financial leaders of your organization have to make that happen. As well, we also have a CFO presentation, which is free. You know, if you're having trouble with your career or you're listening to this and you just can't make the jump from controller to CFO, you can come and see us on November 2nd from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Canadian University of Dubai, where I'll be there, and as well, Mark Shuttleworth, who's the former CFO of Do, will be doing a presentation on what it takes to make it to the top of the corporate game. And he'll also be drawing a parallel between his climb to the top of Mount Everest, which he climbed in one of the deadliest seasons of all time, where 12 people unfortunately passed away on the mountain. And Mark continued to press on tenaciously and summited that mountain. It's really a fascinating story, but he draws the parallel to, you know, your summiting at the top of your career and summiting this mountain with visuals and pictures and everything. It's amazing. It's free as well on November 2nd from 6:30 to 9 p.m. And this is for all those people out there who never got a chance. Maybe you never got a chance to get access to good leaders or go to a great school. So this is a community event. It's a CSR event. It's free. It's there to help anybody. It's for professionals. It's for, just come in and bring your career questions with us. Bring your CV. Hey, Shane, is this this right? Is this wrong? Okay, enough about that, though, but it's free. I just wanted you guys to know, and there's a lot of help out there. There's a lot. The best thing about successful people is they want to help you be successful. So I just want to answer a few questions from the audience, which are lighting up here. Firstly, the study that we quoted that said, what are the big determinant factors for wealth creation, or the number one factor when we look at what's really going to drive your salary up? It wasn't IQ and it wasn't performance. Stupid CEOs who have bad performance routinely get paid more than smart CEOs who make good results. What's the difference? And this study is in, it was done by Dr. Pfeiffer, who's the head of organizational behavior at Stanford University. And he is one of the iconic leaders of organizational behavior in the world. His book is called Power. And the study is in there. And the name of the book gives the study away. It's really your power structure. Those individuals who have more power will be making more money, power defined as the amount of resources you use. But let me just introduce our CFO panel here for our next few questions as I bring in the financial heavy guns to take care of the tough ones. I just take the easy ones and pass the tough stuff off. Just like a senior manager kind of style would. But Ramesh Mahalingam, the managing director of Ideal Management Consultants, and the CFO behind Marka, one of the great success stories in the Middle East, an IPO that was oversubscribed 36 times. Ramesh, welcome back to Ion Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
And then we have VP Nagarajan, the executive director for projects at ETA Group. Welcome back, VPN.
Thank you.
So here's a question that we have coming in from the audience. It says, a lot of line managers here in the Middle East, they're managing a business, but they don't have full P&L responsibility. How can they really optimize their business when they don't know the cost position, they don't know their revenue targets, they don't actually know what's happening financially to the business unit?
I would say that is a very unfortunate thing. Unless the line managers know the cost and they have a P&L responsibility, it's not possible for the company to course correct in case something is not proper. And this is absolutely essential, especially if it's a larger organization with several divisions and several operating units. You need to give bottom line responsibility and you need to share the cost structure. That is one thing that basically helps an organization to grow. Not disclosing information will certainly not allow the organization to grow. For a growth-oriented organization, for an organization that needs to develop itself, the sharing of cost information and the bottom line responsibility is a must.
Ramesh, what do you think?
I would entirely agree, and I would go on to say that the line managers should be the ones building up their budgets. They should be the ones committing to senior management as to how much they would make in terms of revenue and how much they would make in terms of bottom line. And until and unless they put their own numbers forward before the year commences, you can't really hold them responsible if they do not make the numbers that management had imposed upon them.
So you think that if a business unit manager does not have P&L responsibility, he should be abdicated from any responsibility? Is that what you just said, or did I miss that?
Not entirely. However, you can't really hold a guy responsible if you have not given him the information and the tools that he needs for planning and putting his budget across. A line manager who doesn't know what revenue or what bottom line he made or is supposed to make cannot be motivated anywhere near the level of one who does know and who does get involved. Well, his involvement, his ownership of his bottom line will never be the same.
No one's gonna argue that. But why is this happening in the Middle East?
This is a legacy of a very protective environment. But the good news is that such companies are actually diminishing in number as we go forward progressively. The accounting systems are in place. Divisional, departmental P&Ls are available now easier. And information is being shared. These type of companies will fall away. They'll lag behind and they'll get overtaken by the ones where the line managers display their ownership. They share the ownership.
See, what gets quantified will get measured. and what gets measured, you can improve. But if this is not there, there is an issue. But one possibility could be that it's some kind of a rent-seeking, high-profit environment where it's being sold at a price that I don't know where he works, but I'm just guessing that it might be a high-margin-oriented business where probably that particular line manager is allowed to do the task and to execute, and the rest of it is being captured elsewhere. Could be a possibility.
We're running out of time. Quickly, if you can answer this in 1 minute, they're saying there's a new trend now where CFOs are more commonly becoming the CEO. Is that something that we're going to see accelerate as we go into the 21st century here in the Middle East, North African region?
When a CFO has a good hang of the numbers, he's in reasonable touch with strategy, and he can look forward, he has the communication ability, and he can market. Definitely, he's the right candidate to occupy the position of CEO.
Particularly if it's a non-technical business where a CFO with his 360-degree view of the company, his ability to zoom into any department or any transaction to the deepest level of detail, and then come back surface to a helicopter view with ease, such a CFO with a very good communication and the linkages with the suppliers and the rest of the ecosystem of that business, he is really well poised to become a CEO, and we've seen quite a few of them. Gone are the days when only the marketing and sales types would occupy the CEO slot.
Well, I want to thank you guys so much for coming. Unfortunately, we're out of time here. And so, VPN, thank you so much. And good luck with the future of your organization. And Ramesh, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having us.
So that was VP Nagarajan, the Executive Director for Projects at ETA Group, and Ramesh Mahalingam, the Managing Director of Ideal Management Consultants and CFO of Marka, the publicly traded company that was 36 times oversubscribed. Very big success story that I think is going to continue to unravel. Maybe it's not too late for you to buy some stock. And lastly, I just want to remind you that on November 2nd, this coming Sunday in the evening, we have a live event at Canadian University of Dubai with Mark Shuttleworth's presentation on climbing Mount Everest and climbing the corporate ladder. It's going to be at the Canadian University of Dubai from 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. in the Red Theater. I'm Shane Phillips, asking you to make the rest of your life the best of your life, and good luck chasing your dreams.